Hello, everyone. This is Mellow Max, and you're listening to Even More Highly Recommended on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. I am doing Freeform Soundscapes this fine Wednesday night. It is 7 p.m., and we're going to have some cool music and some other stuff around the cool music. So don't go anywhere, and let's have some fun with it.
Side is at once mournful and menacing, yet strangely alluring. While it paralyzes our own movement, we sense behind it the vague form pursuing tirelessly, its ghostly silence broken only by the final snarling leap, the abrupt scream. Well, such is the stuff that myths are built on. And such is the potential in the wolf's fear-striking ability that the folk language of dozens of countries is filled with such tales. But from these tales, most of us form our lasting, erroneous impressions of the wolf. Because there is not a case, not one, of wolves attacking and killing man on this continent, there are rumors and adventure stories and fascinating lies, but no authenticated cases. Even though strangely on learning this, we feel a certain disappointment at being robbed of a delicious childlike fear. Mankind's fear of wolves is perfect. It surpasses our dread of tigers. We find them more dangerous than sharks. Why? Why this terror of a beast half our weight and almost identical in appearance to the dog, the most beloved animal outside our species? It is not his appearance that stops our heart. The opposite. His invisibility. It is possible to live in the same habitat with a wolf for years and never encounter him. He is elusive. We know he is near, for we see his tracks. We know he kills, for we see the remains. We know he lives because we hear the howl. And that howl has created our attitude toward the wolf more than any other of his habits or characteristics. A trapper once tried to describe it. Take a dozen railroad whistles, braid them together, and let one strand after another drop off, the last peal so frightfully piercing as to go through your heart. The howl of the threatening wolf, that ugly signal of catastrophe, echoes through our culture, repeated in songs, in poems, in movies. And only now, in the twilight of the wolf's time on this planet, are we leaving behind the myths and the folk tales and learning some facts about the wolf?
That was fun. Someone from Tufts just called me asking for money. And I was like, hey, listen, I have my radio show right now. Give me a break. Tune in, and I'll give you money later. Call me back.
When man arrived, he destroyed the wolf's natural prey, the buffalo, the moose, the caribou. He changed the habitat of the wolf and the wolf's prey, and he turned the lands over to his own defenseless beasts, the cow and the horse, sheep and goat. The wolf adapts, He kills and eats the only prey available to him, man's livestock. And while man fights back with guns and traps, snares and poisons, the wolf's only means of survival are his wits. So he learns to hide from man. He attempts to move away to other territory, away from the awful power of man. And so, once having the largest distribution of any large mammal in North America, today he is gone from all the United States but Alaska and part of the upper Great Lakes states. Even where he still lives, he is pursued because he kills deer, moose, caribou that man values for sport hunting. He lives and travels in his pack. With luck on his side, life lasts about 7 years. Although his jaws are powerful enough to snap a 2-inch log or crush an elk's thigh, they are seldom turned on his fellow wolves, and he never fights to the death. His teeth, his speed, his very strength are simply tools by which he has a chance to live long enough to continue his species. The wolf brings no more anger or ferocity to his task of catching and killing a deer than you or I do in eating a sirloin steak or picking apples. He never kills for the thrill of killing, and he returns to the kill over and over until it is finished. When he kills, he usually kills the old and the infirm, the diseased, and of course some young. By killing, he strengthens the herd. Ironically, by every kill, he ensures that the next victim will be even harder to take. As the Eskimo legend puts it so neatly, the wolf and the caribou are one, for the caribou feeds the wolf. But it is the wolf who keeps the caribou strong. The wolf is not a hunter, not in the way that the leopard is a hunter. The wolf's success at hunting comes because he is a wanderer. Indeed, this is a genetic trait. Wolves that keep moving find more prey and consequently survive longer. They slip into a tireless trot of about 5 miles per hour, which the wolf can maintain for half a day. The element of chance governs their encounter with prey as much as any specific hunting skill. As they cover the miles that make up a day's travel, they ordinarily come upon a herd or a single animal. When that happens, they give chase. And they are successful less than 7% of the time. That seems astounding until we remember that the wolf has made his prey strong. By culling the weakest and slowest, the wolf causes the remaining faster animals to become the breeding stock. And a newer, stronger animal is the result. And so the wolf travels and chases, and often enough wins. And the prey races away for its very life, and often enough wins. Life in the pack, though apparently simple, is extraordinarily intricate. Each wolf must learn exactly his position. He learns whom he can dominate, and he remembers those who dominate him. In each pack, there is one stronger wolf, which none can dominate, and who dominates all others. This is the leader, or alpha wolf. He leads his pack until he is deposed by a younger, stronger wolf, who then becomes the next alpha, the next leader. The leader must be forever alert, protecting his position of dominance, and displaying the leadership that will win food and shelter. When the wolf chooses a mate, it is done within the rules of dominance already established in the pack. About 3 weeks before the birth of the pups, the female begins to seek her den. Soon, for the billionth time, wolf pups enter the world. They are blind, deaf, and weigh about 1 pound. The female stays with them. The male continues to travel with the pack. When they bring down the prey, the male carries food back to the den, either in his mouth or in his stomach. But aside from bringing the food, the male is not allowed to contribute much to the early upbringing of the pups. In about 2 months, the pups are big enough to leave the den, and the entire family moves out to a litter site. This is usually a large open area where the pups can play while the pack hunts. And now any member of the pack might become the babysitter. Wolves love wolf pups and will patiently suffer through long hours of aggravation by them. They delight in watching the pups play, and join in rolling, jumping, chasing, and slowly impart knowledge that the pups will later use in stalking or pursuing and catching prey. Here in the open, if you could watch without being seen, you could learn some of the language of the wolf. First, the wolf's body language. When you have owned a dog long enough, you learn to read some of his body language. His tail wags when he's happy, he cringes when frightened, his lips pull back in a snarl when he's angry. But the wolf has a richer physical vocabulary. The way he holds his tail can broadcast his social position in the pack.
Just in case anyone's wondering what the heck you're listening to, this is Even More Highly Recommended with Mellow Max, and you're listening to Soundscapes. That's the incredible thing about freeform radio, you know? When I first got my radio show during my first training, my trainer told me, hey, listen, this is freeform radio. And what does that mean, you might ask? Well, freeform radio means that if I wanted to, I could crumple a paper bag into the microphone for a full hour and call it Soundscapes. You guys are lucky that I decided not to do that, but it's damn near close. We got some cool music in the background, we got wolves, we had a bit of Paul Revere, and now you got me talking to you. You know, I just, I'm enjoying myself. You know, I might break out a synthesizer in a little bit, add some more noise to it. Oh, and also, fun fact, other than the music is, you know, digital, but everything else is on vinyl. And let me tell you the wonderful selection of albums I have today. One moment, please. All right. First up, we've got The Language and Music of the Wolves, narrated by Robert Redford. That's what you hear in the background right now. Not right now, but that's what you'd been listening to. And we've got Persuasive Percussion, Volume 4, whatever that means. The Monty Python Instant Record Collection. The Story of Star Wars, a narrated version of the Star Wars, you know, what is it, a true saga, really. And then I have Dr. Seuss Presents, If I Ran the Zoo, and Dr. Seuss's Sleep Book. Hey Max, why do you have all these weird, weird albums on vinyl? I don't know. I like going to Goodwill. Why don't you? Jeez. It's fun. Yeah, no. Love a good collection. Love a good weird album. And I've listened to some of them. I haven't listened to others of them. So, hey, we're all in it for an adventure. And I'm also here, you know, refiguring out how to use all of the controls on the DJ board. Because this is my second show in 2 years. It's so nice to be back. I hope someone out there is enjoying my soundscapes. We got plenty more to come. It is 7:13. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. I am your DJ, Mellow Max. My radio show is Even More Highly Recommended, the sequel to my original radio show, Plain Old Highly Recommended. Music I recommend highly. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. Right now in the back, we have National Health with Tenemos Roads. I was doing some deep digging into some music, some genres that I've always liked, and just going deeper and deeper and deeper, because they're already weird genres, and now I'm just finding all the other weirder subgenres. So this is Tenemos Roads by National Health. Coming up next is a song by Hatfield and the North called Going Up to People and Tinkling.
Facial expressions that threaten, that show suspicion, that indicate puzzlement, that suggest pleasure. And these expressions can be read by all other wolves in the pack. One of the reasons wolves so seldom fight among themselves is that they can communicate their feelings so clearly, so a crisis situation is almost never reached. And the wolf employs sound. Out of my sight, or this food is mine, or stay away from my pups. It is always unfriendly. We seldom think of wolves barking, but they do, and they seem to mean something by it. There's an alarm bark, all silent until they determine what the danger is. The second bark is a challenge. It helps the wolf establish territory, and it is a clear warning to intrude. And finally, the howl. Sound that gives shape to so much of our terror. One after another, never on the same note, never for the same length of time. All voices different, yet eternally unchanged. The wolf loves to howl. Listen. When a howl begins, all wolves in the area reply, seeking contact with one another. Some wolves will run to join the pack and contribute their own song. During the howl, each wolf is concerned with his own melody, but is also aware of his brothers. The wolves often land on the same note. One or the other will soon shift by a note or two. Maybe wolves like chords. A typical howl may begin with a few long, low howls.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, a great adventure took place.
Rebel streaks, striking from a hidden base, have won their first victory against the evil Galactic Empire. During the battle, Rebel spies
and wanderers. The pack often spreads out more than a mile. As they roam during their nightly hunts, the howl would help them maintain contact. The howl also can proclaim territory. And because one wolf recognizes the howls of his own pack, he can avoid trespassing onto another pack's territory. During his life, the wolf is seldom out of sound of the howl, except during bad weather and except...
But Princess Leia's cruiser is no match for the warship, which swiftly overtakes her vessel. In moments, Imperial stormtroopers invade the Rebel craft with a blaze of laser weapons.
Howl and seek contact with each other until the howl ends. But today, that howl is heard less and less. As his numbers diminish and his lands are usurped, the wolf moves away. Soon, he will have no territories to retreat to. Soon, his kind will disappear. And this splendid creature, this living machine that has triumphed for 10,000 millennia, will follow other species into the absolute, irreversible emptiness of extinction. No science will replace him. No other being will possess his qualities. A strand in Earth's thin web of life will be gone. He has been driven from most of Europe. He is being driven from North America. He is bountied in Alaska, Ontario, and the Northwest Territories. He is poisoned and trapped. He is shot from airplanes and chased by riflemen on snowmobiles into the last retreats of vanishing wilderness. Wild wolves are almost gone.
Secret information that could save the Rebel cause. Then she disappears into the smoke-filled corridor as Freakio appears.
At last! Where have you been? They're heading in this direction. What are we going to do? We'll be sent to the spice mines of Kessel, smashed into who knows what?
But R2-D2 is already scooting down the sub-hallway, emitting a series of mechanical beeps and chirps that only Freakio can understand.
This is Mellow Max, reporting back in, and I'm just here to tell you that, you know, if you like what you're hearing, great, call in. If you don't like what you're hearing and you want to complain, that's great, call in. I'm just over here doing my thing. You know, if you want to be on air, call in. We can have a nice chat over the background noise of, you know, this is Udu Wudu by Magma. They're a fun French band that invented their own language and their own genre, and they did all their music in said language. Their genre is Zheul, Z-H-E-U-L. It's fascinating, weird stuff. Whole lot of weird stuff going on everywhere, including here at WMFO in Medford. But yeah, our phone number is 855-915-WMFO. That's right, it's 855-915-WMFO, 9636. One more time, 855-915-9636. Or if you know me in real life, give me a call. Drop me a text. Let me know that this sounds horrible. Let me know that this sounds great. Or just sit back and enjoy it, you know? It's not going anywhere. Thank you for tuning in. There's another 38 minutes to go. And I am looking forward to it. All right.
Station plans are not aboard this ship, and no transmissions were made. An escape pod was jettisoned during the fighting, but no life forms were aboard.
She must have hidden the plans in the escape pod. Send a detachment down to retrieve them. See to it personally, Commander. There'll be no one to stop us this time.
Yes, sir.
The robot's escape pod lands in the middle of a vast desert on the remote planet of Tatooine. They escape the Imperial forces, but soon face.
Yeah, we've all seen Star Wars. We know what comes next. Thanks a lot, narrator. Keep it interesting, maybe. Give us something new. This is new. I found this song earlier today, and I had to move things around. I was so excited about it. This is Arrakis by Dune. Great reference. If you liked the books, great. If you liked the old movie, huh? Why? I haven't seen it, but it sounds awful. And if you like the new one, join the club. It was great. I am so excited for the sequel. If you haven't seen Dune, check it out. I want to give a shout out to Mike. Thank you for calling in. We had a local jumbo call in, give us support. I love it. Love to hear it. And yeah, let's get back to the music and soundscapes. I think I'm gonna break out some home movie sound effects next.
What I really need is a droid who understands the binary language of moisture evaporators.
Evaporators? Sir, my first job was programming binary load lifters, very similar to your evaporators in most respects.
Can you speak Bocce?
Of course I can, sir. It's like a second language to me. I'm a squid.
All right, shut up. I'll take this.
Shut up, sir.
Uncle Owen?
Yeah?
What about that one?
What about that blue one? We'll take that one.
I'm quite sure you'll be very pleased with that one, sir. He really is in first-class condition. I've worked with him before. Here he comes.
Okay, let's go.
Luke takes the two robots to the homestead's garage for repairs.
Well, my little friend, you got something jammed in here real good. Were you on a Star Cruiser?
Help me, Obi-Wan. You're my only hope.
What's this?
A three-dimensional likeness of Princess Leia appears in mid-air, projected by R2-D2.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Who is she? She's beautiful.
I'm afraid I'm not quite sure,
help
sir.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
He says that he is the property of Obi-Wan Kenobi, a resident of these parts, and it's a private message for him.
Thank you.
Who is she? She's beautiful.
I'm afraid I'm not quite sure,
help
sir.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
He says that he is the property of Obi-Wan Kenobi, a resident of these parts, and it's a private message for him.
Obi-Wan Kenobi. I wonder if he means old Ben Kenobi.
I beg your pardon, sir, but do you know what he's talking about?
Well, I don't know anyone named Obi-Wan, but old Ben lives out beyond the Dune Sea. He's kind of a strange old hermit.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Who she is.
Wait a minute, where'd she go? Bring her back. Play back the entire message.
What message?
This is Mellow Max, and if you're wondering, what the heck am I listening to? Well, you're not alone. I'm sure there are many people out there wondering the same exact thing, and the answer is, you're listening to WMFO in Medford, Tufts Reform Radio. And this is exactly that, Freeform Radio. It is 7:30. The beautiful thing about Freeform Radio is if I wanted to, I could crumple a paper bag into this microphone for, you know, an hour and call it soundscapes, but I'm not doing that. Instead, I'm giving you this cacophony, and I'm having so much fun, and I hope that you are too. If you're having a good time, if you're not having a good time, call on in. 855-915-WMFO. Yeah, that's what I got. We've got a whole lot more weird sounds and Star Wars and wolves and Monty Python. Oh my! Don't go anywhere. Just a little reminder that, you know, if you think that it sounds a little bit rough at the edges, it probably is. All the music is digital, that's fine, you know, on my computer, blah blah blah, easy peasy. Everything else is on vinyl, so be patient with me. We got a whole bunch of wacky sounds flying everywhere in here. This is Samla Mama's Mana with Folkvisa I Morse. They're a cool Swedish prog rock group. I like them. Weird sounds all around.
It's a pretty good zoo, said young Gerald McGrew. And the fellow who runs it seems proud of it, too. But if I ran the zoo, said young Gerald McGrew, I'd make a few changes. That's just what I'd do. The lions and tigers and that kind of stuff they have up here now are not quite good enough. You see things like these in just any old zoo. They're awfully old-fashioned. I want something new. So I'd open each cage, I'd unlock every pen, let the animals go, and start over again.
All right, I'll be right there, Aunt Peru.
I'm sorry, sir, but he appears to have picked up a slight flutter.
Here, see what you can do with him. I'll be right back.
Just you reconsider playing that message for him. No, I don't think he likes you at all. No, I don't like you either.
Duke returns after his midday meal. Discover that the little robot
of a much more unusual kind. A four-footed lion's not much of a beast. The one in my zoo will have 10 feet at least. 5 legs on the left and 5 more on the right. Then people will stare and they'll say,
what a sight! The zookeeper, newkeeper, Gerald's quite keen. That's the gall darnedest lion I ever have seen.
My new zoo, McGrew Zoo, will make people talk. My new zoo, McGrew Zoo, will make people gawk at the strangest odd creatures that ever did walk. I'll get my zoo a new sort of a hen who roosts in another hen's topknot. Then another one roosts in the topknot of his, and another in his, and another in his, and so forth, and upward and onward. Gee whiz! But that's just a start. I'll do better than that. They'll see me next day in my zookeeper's hat, coming into my zoo with an elephant cat. They'll be so
Are you looking for some sweet, great-tasting snacks that are also healthy for you? Try eating dried fruits. Dried figs, apples, cherries, bananas, apricots, peaches, pears, pineapples, raisins, cranberries, prunes, blueberries, mangoes, and oh, so many more other fruits are both tasty and good for you. Many dried fruits are an excellent natural source of cancer-fighting dietary fiber. Read the labels to understand which brands have added sugars, preservatives, and other ingredients. But no matter what, eating pretty much any kind of fruit is going to be better for you than candy or a processed snack. A public service message from all the fruits and nuts here at WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. Personally, I hope everyone here is learning at least one or two things, really. For one, maybe, you know, always hand the aux to Max at a party. Always a good idea. Never not a good idea. And that Dr. Seuss. Dr. Seuss is great at all times. This ending is great. I'm just gonna... But thank you for tuning in. This is Mellow Max. We got another 19 minutes. 18 minutes. That was Nirvana for Mice by Henry Cow, and this is A Tower Struck Down by Steve Hackett. And we're going to have some more cool sounds in the next 18 minutes. I think I'm going to get out my synth now. So enjoy some Dr. Seuss until then, and then maybe even during then?
They'll ask when they see my strange animals come. Where do you suppose he gets things like that from? His animals all have such very odd faces. I'll bet he must hunt them in rather odd places. And that's what I'll do.
said young Gerald McGrew.
If you want to catch beasts you don't see every day, you have to go places quite out of the way. You have to go places no others can get to. You have to get cold, and you have to get wet too. Up past the North Pole where the frozen winds squeal, I'll go, and I'll hunt in my Skeeglemobile and bring back a family of what do you know? And that's how my new zoo, McGrew Zoo, will grow. I'll hunt in the mountains of Zombamatant with helpers who all wear their eyes at a slant, and capture a fine fluffy bird called the Bustard, who only eats custard with sauce made of mustard, and also a very fine beast called the Flustered, who only eats mustard with sauce made of custard. I'll catch him in caves, and I'll catch him in brooks. I'll catch him in crannies. I'll catch him in nooks that you don't read about in geography books. I'll catch him in countries that no one can spell, like the country of Marafaparafapel. In a country like that, if a hunter is clever, he'll hunt up some beast that you never saw ever. I'll load up 5 boats with a family of jotes, whose feet are like cows but wear squirrel skin coats, and sit down like dogs but have voices like goats, excepting they can't sing the very high notes. And then I'll go down to the wilds of Nantucket and capture a family of lunks in a bucket. Then people will say,
"Now I like that boy here. His new suit, McGrew, is growing by leaps. He captures them wild and he captures them meat. He captures them slim and he captures them sleek. What food do you suppose he will capture next week?"
I'll capture one tiny, I'll capture one cute. I'll capture a deer that no hunter would shoot. A deer that's so nice, he could sleep in your bed if it weren't for those horns that he has on his head. And speaking of horns that are just a bit queer, I'll bring back a very odd family of deer. A father, a mother, 2 sisters, a brother, whose horns are connected from one to the other, whose horns are so mixed they can't tell them apart, can't tell where they end and can't tell where they start. Each deer's mighty puzzle he's never yet found if his horns are hers or the other way round. I'll capture them fat and I'll capture them scrawny. I'll capture a scragglefoot mulligatawny, a high-stepping animal, fast as the wind, from the blistering sands of sin. This beast is the beast that the brave chieftains ride when they want to go fast to find some place to hide. A mulligatawny is fine for my zoo, and so is a chieftain. I'll bring one back, too. In the far western part of southeast North Dakota lives a very fine animal called the iota. But I'll capture one who is even much finer in the northeastern west part of South Carolina. When people see him, they will say,
"Now, by thunder, this new zoo, McGrew Zoo, is really a wonder."
Most beasts are quite friendly, but still in some lands, some beasts are too dangerous to catch with bare hands. For those that are ugly and vicious and mean, I'll build a bad animal catching machine. It's rather expensive to build such a kit, but with it, a hunter can never get bit. A zoo should have bugs, so I'll capture a thwirl whose legs are snarled up in a terrible snarl. And then I'll go out and I'll capture some chugs. Some keen shooter, bean shooter, bean shooter bugs. I'll go to the African island of Yurka and bring back a tizzle-top tufted mazurka, a kind of canary with quite a tall throat. His neck is so long, if he swallows an oat for breakfast the first day of April, they say it has to go down such a very long way that it gets to his stomach the 15th of May. I'll bag a big bug who is very surprising. A feller who has a propeller for rising. And zooming around making cross-country hops from Texas to Boston with only two stops. Now that sort of thing for a bug is just tops. And when I've caught him, then the next thing you know, I'll go and I'll capture a wild tic-tac-toe with X's that win and with zeros that lose. He'll look mighty good in this zoo of McGrews. I'll bring back a gusset, a gherkin, a gasket, and also a gooch from the wilds of Nantasket. And eight Persian princes will carry the basket. But what their names are, I don't know, so don't ask it. In a cave in Khartoum lives a beast called the Natch that no other hunter's been able to catch. He's hidden for years in his cave with a pout, and no one's been able to make him come out. But I'll coax him out with a wonderful meal that's cooked by my cooks in my cooker-mobile. They'll fix up a dish that is just to his taste. Three chicken croquettes made of library paste, then sprinkled with peanut shucks, pickled and spiced, then baked at 600 degrees, and then iced. It's mighty hard cooking to cook up such feasts. But that's how the new zoo, McGruzy, gets beasts. I'll go to the faraway mountains of Topsk, near the river of Nopsk, and I'll bring back an Opsk, a sort of a kind of a thingamabobsk who only eats rhubarb and corn on the cobsk. Then people will flock to my zoo in a mobsk. McGrew, they will say,
does a wonderful jobsk. He hunts with such vim, and he hunts with such vigor. His new zoo, McGrewzy, gets bigger and bigger.
And speaking of birds, there's the Russian Paluski, whose head ski is red ski and belly is blue ski. I'll get one of them for my Zooski McGrewski. Then the whole town will gasp,
why, this boy never sleeps. No keeper before ever kept what he keeps. There's no telling what that young fellow will do.
And then, just to show them, I'll sail to Katru and bring back an Itkutch, a Preep, and a Prue, a Nurkle, a Nerd, and a Seersucker, too. I'll hunt in the jungles of Hipponohungus and bring back a flock of wild Bipponobungus. The Bipponobungus from Hipponohungus are better than those down in Dipponodungus and smarter than those out in Nipponunungus. And that's why I'll catch them in Hipponohungus instead of those others in Nungus and Dungus. And people will say when they see these Bips bounding,
this zookeeper, new keeper, simply a...
The fierce, marginally human creature presses a surprise attack, and in the face of sudden danger...
Drop! When do you suppose this young fellow will stop?
Stop? Well, I should.
They're talking about me, right? When will this young fellow stop? In about 9 minutes. Thank you guys for listening. We got another 9 minutes, 8 minutes of wackiness. Oh, I love this song. It's all in Japanese, so I can't tell you what it is, but it's great.
But I won't stop until I've captured the Fizzamawizzamadil, the world's biggest bird from the island of Quark, who only eats pine trees and spits out the bark. And boy, when I get him back home to my park, the whole world will say,
young McGrew's made his mark. He's built a zoo better than Noah's whole ark. These wonderful, marvelous beasts that he chooses have made him the greatest of all the McGrewses.
They'll all cheer.
What this zoo must be worth. It's the all darnest zoo on the face of the earth.
Yes,
That's what I'd do,
said young Gerald McGrew.
I'd make a few changes if I ran the zoo.
Seven more noses, great yawns are in blossom. They're blooming like roses. The yawn of that one little bug is still spreading. According to latest reports, it is heading across the wide fields to the sleepy night air, across the whole country toward every which way. People are gradually starting to say, I feel rather drowsy. I've had quite a day. Creatures are starting to think about rest. Two Bifferbaum birds are now building their nest. They do it each night. And quite often, I wonder how they do this big job without making a blunder.
But that is their problem. Not yours and not mine.
The point is, they're going to bed, and that's fine. Sleep thoughts are spreading throughout the whole land. The time for night brushing of teeth is at hand. Up at Herkimer Falls, where the great river rushes and crashes down crags in great gargling gushes, the Herkimer sisters are using their brushes. Those falls are just grand for toothbrushing beneath, if you happen to be up that way with your teeth. The news just came in from the castle of Krupp that the lights are all out, and the drawbridge is open. And the old drawbridge drawer just said with a yawn,
my drawbridge is gone, and it's going to stay gone till the milkman delivers the milk about dawn. I'm going to bed now. So nobody better come round with a special delivery litter.
The number of sleepers is steadily growing. Bed is where more and more people are. In Culpeper Springs, in the Stiltwalker's Hall, the Stiltwalker stilts are all stacked on the wall. The Stiltwalker walkers have called it a day. This is really good news. It's important to know. And that's why I'm bothering you. Way out in the west, in the town of Merced, the Hinklehorn Hunting Club just went to bed. Every horn has been quietly cutting a book for the night in its own private Hinklehorn book. All this long, happy day, they've been hunking about. And the Hinklehorn hunkers have hunked themselves out. Morning. And then they'll start right in Hinklehorn hunting again. Everywhere creatures are falling asleep.
The collapsible Frink just collapsed in a heap. And by adding the Frink to the others before, I am able to give you the Who's Asleep score right now.
Guys, that's all we've got tonight. This is DJ Mellow Max, and you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. We just had Yellow Magic Orchestra with something in Japanese. Before that, we had Notwithstanding by Gilgamesh, and right now in the background, Fall 77 by Oregon. Thank you all for tuning in. We'll have more sounds next week. I can't promise they'll be as weird. And that's all I got tonight. See you next week.